Now, I had several pen friends, that was quite true, because that was the only way I could occupy myself. I wasn't one for the boozer.
But also, you were saying that it wasn't just that you were worried about an accident yourself, you'd seen how separation in wartime could put a strain on marriages.
Well, I did mention about the armourer, which...
Yes. The man who eventually committed suicide.
Wanted to... go home and leave and try and unravel the problem, and it wasn't allowed to. But the stress was there on other people as well, because he wasn't the only one that his wife left. And it was a long time, 18 months.
Looking back on it and thinking about the men you were serving with, who you knew or who you could observe, do you think that the single men were happier than the married men when you were out in Gibraltar?
I think they had less to be responsible for, and therefore they were a freer type of person, I think. But because we still had ground crew that had been servicemen before the war, then there were quite a few married men amongst us, and I think because they probably had it fairly easy in the early years, it must have been a stress for them.
They'd found it harder.
It's all surmise, but you could tell sometimes. When have you heard of the males there? You know, this was the only thing that gave a hint that they wanted a letter, and the male was very erratic. C-mail took weeks at times, and we used to get some sort of air mail, but not a lot.
Sounds as though if you were married then you would naturally have anxieties.
You would, yes, and so you'd notice it in that way. I'll tell you another thing that they tended to do. They tended to smoke more and drink more. Mind you, the young people used to do just the same, I think. Not so much smoking, but certainly drinking.
Well, they were off the hook, weren't they? Away from home and no parental supervision. And
that, well, they had no supervision. It was self-control if you haven't got it.
You mentioned in January 1944 that your friend Tiny Smith had an operation on his eye.
I put that in the addendum.
Yes.
Yes. He had a very pronounced, I think it was his right eye, looked towards his nose. And he was a handsome young man for all that. But obviously he was a one-eyed person. And I don't know how he managed to achieve it. But anyway, he told me just before he went, he says, I'm going to have an operation. He said, I'm going to have my eye spooned out. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I've been told that my eye can be improved if I have my eye spooned out and some of the tendons snipped. And that's what I think actually was taking place. Now, the hospital was near your back onto this again. Where's north? There we are. The hospital was in this military area here.
Yes, near Main Street.
Town. Yes, it was on the right-hand side of this main road.
Yeah,
and along near enough near the where the cinema was, and I only went the once to see him. And he still had the patch over his eye. Now, he was in hospital for 6 weeks, but when he came out, it was a changed man, and he was able to see properly. So there was nothing wrong with his eye, it was just being unbalanced in terms of being positioned.
So the operation was a success?
Yes, yes, complete. And of course, he said that they're going to get a surprise when I go home. And that was to Beeston.
And you said after you'd been to see him in the hospital that you had tea at the Salvation Army. Now, what sort of establishment did the Salvation Army have?
No, that's one thing I can't recall. Can't even recall the uniform, if they had one. No, I shall have to pass that over.
Okay. And you also, this time, you recorded that you were, towards the end of January 1944, you were beginning to miss the green fields of home, that you were beginning to get homesick for England.
Yes. As you went through the year, the whole of Spain was brown, and there was La Linea on the left, but it had this scorched earth look about it, and it certainly was, you missed the green. Now, the only time that I had a remarkable experience, never to occur again, I don't know whether I mentioned it, when the airfield came into blossom.
No, you haven't mentioned that.
I have mentioned that. Mm. I haven't?
No.
No? Oh, well then, this is worthwhile. We'd had the winter and the rains, and it looked as if the grass was growing in the sand. And this was all of a very uniform height. It was only about 2 or 3 inches, and the whole of the airfield was the same. The only part, of course, was the runway. Mm-hmm. And you go to bed one night, and you wake up in the morning, and the whole airfield was coloured. And this was pale pink, blue, white, and all the shades, not very strong colours, and it was a carpet of flowers, all opened at the same time, and it looked peculiar to see aircraft sitting in the middle of a platform of flowers. It just didn't seem right. You didn't want to move the aircraft. You didn't want to walk on them. And I can only assume that it was something like an anemone, and it was one that was suited for that particular sandy conditions. Now, how on earth they all grew through this compacted sand is another miracle to me, and that was one of the nature's benefits that I always treasure. It was really wonderful to see it, and there you are.
How long did this last? This
only about a week, and it faded away, and then it went back to the what you might call compacted sand.
Sounds as though it was rather like the desert blooming.
Yes, it really was a magnificent sight. And of course, when we went back on a holiday period, not very long ago, the whole thing has been tarmacked over. And I thought, what a terrible shame. I wonder how many of those bulbs were lifted. The chances are they weren't.
So they'd still be there beneath the...
Might well be, yes, might well be.
Well, plants have been known to grow through tarmac.
Well, it would be a surprise to them.
Something else you mentioned in early 1944 is getting rid of all unserviceable dinghies. Do you remember doing that, getting rid of...
Well, it was... There isn't much to say about that at all. I had no hand in actually getting disposing of them. It was just a matter of, well, what have we got that we don't need? And it was including that German dinghy.
Yes.
That and we just simply bundled them and they were taken away. Now, where they went, I don't know.
Just wondering, you know, whether you actually cannibalised dinghies at all to get spares when you needed to replace parts?
The only parts that we got spares for was water. That was tins of water, because some of these tins were dated, and every so often they had to be changed. Now, I can only assume that they could corrode inside. I never opened one, but that was the only thing. And sometimes we used to get a new item to be added in, such as the matches weren't in the very early stages, and I think another one was these tablets, they had energy tablets. I think they were made by one of the milk companies, you know, dried milk, such as Nestle's. And these were concentrated, supposed to be energy. And one or two little things like that. But we never had any spares from the very outset. The only thing I used to get back was the dinghy sometimes with the empty bottle. Well, the empty bottle I couldn't recharge. It would have to go elsewhere. So there was a little bit of clutter towards the end.
And did you take parts from damaged aircraft? Did you cannibalise aircraft that had been written off?
You couldn't do it with dinghies.
No, but for other parts of the aircraft.
Oh, certainly. Yes. Yes. Wing tips in particular, because the compact parking of these aircraft, it was so easy that when they were turning an aircraft, particularly with a tractor or something like that, that the wing tips touched, and of course it knocked out either the lights or just caused enough damage. But it was a simple piece to just a section like that, could take it off and it could replace it. So yes, there were parts that were taken, but not major parts. The only, I think there was a wing one time that we had a damaged wing, and that we had to change the whole lot. And that was 2-6, form 2-6. Everybody had to help.
Right.
And in this case, it was a question, all hold it very, very steady, and you had to lift this so carefully so that the bolts were not going to damage the threads.
So you were replacing a wing by hand?
Yes.
How many of you were there holding this wing up?
Virtually the whole of the ground crew. Mm. And so, and of course, we'd taken all the weights off, such as wheels and undercarriage and things like that.
It was just the pure wing itself?
Just the wing itself, yes.
What was the wing made of?
The wing was still supported by a crane.
Yes.
But
you had to manoeuvre it?
We just had to weight balance it to get the bolts lined up. There's just two main bolts.
Yes.
And these were thundering big bolts. And the threads, of course, you had to be very careful. And I don't know whether they used a marlin spike to line them up or anything like that. But they didn't in this particular case. I would have thought a marlin spike on the back end
would be useful.
Bring the bolt in from the other end. But it was very, very touch and go because it's a B-fit. That is, you actually use a mallet to knock them in once you've got it started.
Knock the bolt in.
Yes. There's no slack. B-fit is a tight fit. And so they were tight fits as well. You finished up hammering them.
Now, the fuselage is metal and fabric, isn't it? What was the wing? Was that metal and fabric as well?
It was geodetic construction as the aircraft. But, of course, you have the fuel tanks in there and you've got loads of connections to make up.
Yes.
And I've been inside the wing doing it, and it's not a very pleasant place to be, particularly when you've had petrol being drained off and things like that. And you only had a little small panel between the fuselage and the undercarriage, and you had to take this off with those Zeus fasteners, the screwdriver, and climb inside. You could only just get the body inside, and you had to do an hand to torch. It was all a question of feel for it.
I assume this would be hydraulic and electronic connections?
Yes, not so much hydraulic. No, it was fuel pipes connecting, and rods for the flaps and things like that. Ailerons.